Jim's on the phone right now. How you doing, Jim?
Great, Steve. How are you guys doing?
Well, everybody's doing good. They've been waiting for you. The chat room, you know how this works. The chat room's all kind of filled up, and everybody wanted to hear about Jim Hurst. They got so excited when I started posting your videos on Facebook. Man, you got a lot of stuff out there on YouTube.
Well, you know, it's some of that stuff has been placed by me, some by other people, but, you know, if it's something that's really horrible, I ask them to take it down. And if I see it, what I do is I try to get them to say used by permission, because I think part of the YouTube thing is, you know, intellectual property is what it is.
Right.
The rights still belong to the songwriters. And actually the performers too, although the digital media, you know, the digital awareness and ability has really leaps and bounds have gone past rights, as you well know, being an ex-attorney. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, I think everybody's trying to do the right thing. And so it doesn't hurt me that if a good performance is out there and then people can see who I am and what I do, and it's actually kind of helped me out a lot. But it's unauthorized, and what I think some of these people don't realize is that in some way they're really breaking laws, or at least they're bending them. And ethically, you know, they've all been, anybody that has something on that, like I had a really bad performance, which happens once in a while.
Nah.
Maybe not to Alison Krauss and Vince Gill, Russell Moore, but it happens to me. And so if I ask them to take it down, everybody has. And I've only had to ask a couple of people. I mean, I'm fairly fortunate in the things that people post, whether they recorded other things that they didn't choose to post or whatever. But a lot of it has been pretty decent. So I feel like I never tweak my albums to perfect, because I feel like when they see me live, they're going to see what the real deal is. So why not sell them a CD that's the real deal, or let a video goes out that's a real deal, instead of spending hours going in there and nipping and tucking everything, tummy tuck and chin lifts and all that. I just feel like it needs to be as natural and real as possible. So I'm really thankful and fortunate that there's a lot of stuff.
Well, you know, most of it out there, and I do what I do on this show, and you know this, when I have somebody coming up and I can find stuff on YouTube, you know, I throw it on Facebook because it's just a way to let people know who's coming up. And I don't know, I found three or four videos I thought were pretty good of yours and threw them up there, and people were just like, yeah, man, Jim Hurst, that's the guy, you know, and they were very excited. And it was good. Some of the stuff from IBMA last year, maybe that was pretty good.
You know what? I was so pleased with not only the opportunity to be probably the first solo artist to perform on a major showcase, official showcase. I think I'm the first one. But not only was I had the opportunity to do that, but I think the lighting and the sound and, you know, the actual event for me, it really, I couldn't ask for it to be any better. If I could have looked like Vince Gill or something, it might have helped. But, you know, I'm just me. But I think the performance is good. I think my energy was good. I felt like that, you know, what I did is a reflection of what I do, and, you know, my booking agent was there, and we got some bookings out of the deal, and people got to know who I was. I had many of my favorite people, legends in the business, if you will, including people like Carl Jackson and Lynn Morris and Mark Wilburn and folks like that come up to me and tell me how much they liked what I did.
And
younger folks, too, you know.
And you know, Jim, those aren't people that are blowing smoke.
No, they wouldn't do it if they didn't mean it.
No, and they're good people, but they're going to come to you and tell you good things if they mean it and they want you to know it. So that, you know, talk about your, of course, we have the new album, Intrepid. By the way, let me thank you one more time for October 27th. You drove up to Lexington with your guitar, and for nothing, folks, Jim came in and participated in a fundraiser for the Worldwide Bluegrass Network, because we're all volunteers here, and I know you spent a long day in the car, man, and I know you were, I think the next day you were headed back somewhere else, and Jim came up with his guitar. We're going to talk about this one man, one guitar thing you're doing, by the way, but just put on a great show for everyone. That was all broadcast live, and just appreciate it so much. But I just really, we at the station here, we need stuff like that so we can just keep, you know, getting music out to people and exposure more and more and more. But boy, we do thank you for it.
Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing, man. I mean, there are people who are yearning to hear bluegrass, and some of them, you know, they live in far enough removed areas that they don't, and some of them don't even have, you know, very good radios to begin with. But, you know, Terra Firma Radio right now seems to be doing what sells trucks and boots and whatever.
Right.
And that's really cool. I mean, that's what they're in the business for, is ad revenue and all that. But it used to be that bluegrass was a little more represented in commercial radio with the country music stations, but now country is not really country. The commercial country music stations are not really playing country. They're playing stuff that has a country sound, but the legends are not being heard, which is one of the things I love about bluegrass. We hold near and dear the legends, those that have gone and those that are still here, and folks like you and Worldwide Bluegrass give the listeners a good mix of that. Mm-hmm. And they can donate in, because it's obviously you guys are volunteering your time, and it takes money to buy equipment and maintain that stuff, and it's really a wonderful service you're doing. So if I can come in and in a way say thanks to you and also the fans that listens to WWB, and you know, some of them listen to what I do.
Sure.
No, my sweat equity, you know, is I love playing, so it's not like I have to go dig a ditch for somebody, but if I need to do that, I could do that too. Maybe I'd have to build up to that, but it's a good way for me to say thank you to you guys and help to continue what you guys are doing. So it was a real honor. And as a benefit to that too, there's a guy there that videotaped the thing and sent me a copy of my doing my mom's song.
Yeah.
When I walked in, people had asked me right when I walked in. They said, "Hey, you're going to do your mom and dad song, aren't you?" And some people asked by name. Some people just said your mom and dad. Some said, "Do that garden song," you know. And so the cool thing is he recorded that. And at the end, I just stepped beside the mic, and the whole room, you know, just sang the song for me, you know. Mm-hmm. For all of us, they all joined in on the song. And so I got the recording of that and took it to my mom.
Oh.
It was really awesome. So I really got a lot out of it. Being a part of it.
It was a blast. And by the way, Terry Poirier is in the chat room here, and Terry worked so many hours putting that together, and he was stuck back in the corner pushing buttons and making sure the signal went out. But Terry, I know you're out there, buddy, and we all just, to me, I just walked in, they handed me a microphone, but Terry worked his hind end off getting that show together and did such a great job.
Yeah, and you know, everybody chipped right in and did a lot of work. You know, Gracie and you were there, and you know, there was a lot of folks there that, you know, you guys work tirelessly to do this. I mean, you do it because you love it, and you do it because there's a value in it. But I want to say thanks to you. And by me coming up to be a part of the fundraiser is just another way of me saying thanks.
Well, we appreciate it. Hey, talk a little bit about this Through the Garden song. Then I'm going to talk to you about the Intrepid and then the fact that you're the man with the guitar traveling around. Tell me a little bit about Through the Garden. Tell the people that don't know. And we're talking to Jim Hurst here on Worldwide Bluegrass. But, Jim, let's talk about Through the Garden, how that song came about.
Okay. Well, I talked to Mom about this because, you know, I've been playing since I was a wee lad, you know, really getting serious after about 7 or 8, maybe a little before that. But I started playing guitar at four. And so, you know, Mom and Dad, my mom never sang where anybody could hear her. She just was a shy kind of person. And one time I caught her singing when she was putting her makeup on before she went to work. Her and I worked at the same place, and I just kind of peeked around the corner. She was looking at the mirror, and she saw me, and she was a little embarrassed. I said, "Mom, that's a sweet voice. You shouldn't hide that." But anyway, her and Dad got together. Dad sang and played around the house, but he never went out and made any money doing it. He just loved doing it. So they got together back. Mom said she thought it was 1963. And they got together and wrote this song. And they didn't think anything about it. They just wrote a song that they liked. You know what? They grew up listening to folks like the Delmore Brothers and the Carter Family, and, you know, Jimmy Rogers and those kind of things. That's kind of music they got to hear. Of course, bluegrass, you know, Bill Monroe and Flat Scruggs. But when they grew up, that's the kind of sound that they just called it music. They didn't really know to call it bluegrass or country or whatever. So.
And that's important, by the way. Go ahead. But I mean, that's an important distinction.
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, folks from the mountains, I mean, I think they have a certain personal ownership to that kind of music, and I totally understand and respect that. So when I do those songs, I try to do them with a lot of respect. I mean, it's inside me. I can't help it, but I do make the effort to not flippantly do the songs. It's really important to me that, you know, the integrity of that music is still maintained, and because of you guys doing what you're doing, people are able to hear the first and second generations doing this stuff. So, you know, they got together and wrote this song. They wrote one song in 1963, and of course my family, Dad used to sing around the house with either him by himself and my older brother or sister singing harmony, or his brother, my Uncle Eldon, who we just lost about a month or so ago.
Sorry.
They would do duet stuff. And so they would sing that song, and I just always loved it. But, you know, growing up in Toledo, Ohio, from a family that came from the mountains, I felt like people were kind of, you know, not necessarily on board with that kind of music. There were some people that were, and some of my friends were, but a lot of folks I went to school with high school and things. They just didn't really get into that kind of music. I think they're all kind of there now. But anyway, I never really played that song very many places. And then my mom, she'll be 87 this year. And so it just dawned on me to do something with the song. Michael and Jennifer and Raymond McLean recorded it on one of their albums, More Fun Than We Ought to Have, titled, it was the title of their CD on Pinecastle Records. And I submitted it to them, and they recorded it. That was the first time it got recorded. And Mom got a few dollars of royalties through my, because I published it for her.
Yeah.
And I give her all the money, but she got a couple, you know, a few dollars from me. And then when I put it on Intrepid, you know, later on, I just did it because I felt like it was more about who I am and where I come from and the fact that I love that kind of music. There's a couple of songs on there that with that similar kind of flavor. One written by a Lexington guy, Bob Gregory. But anyway, that song just has always been a family favorite for us. And to see this kind of reaction to the song by the fans and people from all over wanting to take video lessons with me to, you know, Skype video lessons one-on-one to learn how to play the song, and they're wanting the lyrics so they can sing it, and I tell Mom about all that, and she's so tickled. So, you know, her and Dad writing one song and getting one song recorded twice, really, is pretty good. That's 1,000% batting average. I don't think anybody can beat that.
That's 1,000% times two, Jim. They got it recorded twice.
Exactly. I think it's awesome. And so Mom, she's like, well, I wish I could write another song. And I said, Mom, just get a piece of paper out and pencil and write it down. And the family, either my sisters and brother and I, or I'll help her try to write something. Who knows?
Hey, would you mind, and I don't want to keep you because I know we talked about the fact that you're an expecting grandpa. Would you mind, now that everybody's heard about it, could I play that song and we'll come back to you in just a minute?
I would love that.
All right, man, let's do that. We're going to play Through the Garden from Intrepid, and you heard Jim Hirsch describe that song as he does so well. Let's just take and Jim will still be here on the phone. The chat room's buzzing. I'm going to play you Through the Garden. Neat tune. Hold on 1 second.
Thank you, bud. I'm not in the chat room, by the way.
That's okay.
I could possibly do it, but my phone is over the internet.
That's okay.
It seems like when I try to do more than a couple of things, it kind of slows down in my speech. The phone, it's a voice over internet protocol phone. Once in a while, it don't happen very often, but I sure as heck don't want it to happen here.
Well, Jim, I don't. We just heard Through the Garden, and Jim and I were talking about, this is Jim Hirsch on the phone, we're talking about chat room people. There's a bunch of people in there saying, hey, Jim. And what he's saying is that, and I do the same thing, Jim. I get emails during the show. Well, I won't dare leave this screen and go track down an email because I know I'll kick myself off because I'm stupid. So
right.
Once I'm on and it's working, I don't touch anything except answer the phone. So everybody out there, you know how it is. Everybody out there just heard Through the Garden, beautiful tune, and done so beautifully by you. And that's on the new album, Intrepid, which gets a lot of play on this network. You ought to know that.
Well, you know, you guys have always been kind to me, you know, right from the start with Les Sears and Gracie Muldoon. You guys have always been really kind to me, and I really, really appreciate that. I mean, it takes a village, and I think the listeners can only hear it if you guys play it, and you can only play it if I send it to you and I record it, you know, and all. So I think the teamwork really works, and I thank you guys for helping me to get my music out there. It helps me with my booking and paying the bills.
Well, you are so welcome. Now, the newer album that, of course, we all have a lot of stuff from Jim in the past, but the new album is Intrepid, and that's you and a guitar.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing about it is I've worked in a lot of bands, Steve, and you know, I've worked with Missy and I did a duet for almost 9 years. And before and after that, we worked with Claire Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
All with Claire Lynch in the Front Porch String Band with her husband Larry and Michael McLean. And then afterwards, you know, when Larry and Claire left the road to finish raising their children, and Claire had back surgery and a bunch of home things that they need to do, Missy and I did the duet. And then about 04, she called us. She was going back out on the road, but her husband Larry didn't want to go. So she started the Claire Lynch Band, and they retired the Front Porch String Band name. And Missy and I played with her, and I retired from her. I left her in March 2010. Mm-hmm. Since then, I mean, I played in other bands. You know, I played with some country artists. I played with people like John Cowan, Mark Schatz. I played some solo dates here and there, a few dates with people like Sam Bush or Tim O'Brien or, you know, different folks like that. But I think after all the ensemble work and being a sideman for hire, I think doing what I do now allows me to really explore the guitar and the music that I like a lot. And I think it allows me to develop things on the guitar you can't do in a band situation, because you got to leave room for everybody else. And some people don't want to do all that on guitar, even if they could. Some people can, and they choose not to. There's plenty of people like that. But I think, for me, it was a way for me to really express myself in a way that people had never heard before. And as you probably know, talking to all these artists, it ain't as easy to make a living in a band situation right now with the cost of fuel and food and all that, maintenance off the buttons of bands and things. It's really hard. And people's income hasn't went up, costs have went up. So
right.
I think you're seeing a lot of different artists kind of pare down to two or three people sometimes, half of the band, or like Steve Gulley and Dale Ann are going out a little bit with maybe sometimes with Bill Ledbetter or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think it's just really hard for a band to make a living right now with the way the economy is and everything. So I think it was fortuitous for me, kind of by happenstance, for me to do the solo thing. It's what I wanted to do anyway. And it was kind of a mix of courage and foolish angst or whatever for me to do that. And so that's why I chose the name Intrepid. It was like me stepping away from what
I'm
comfortable with. Working for someone like Claire is something I'll always love and be proud of, because I love her music. I love her voice. I love the guitar work and some banjo work and mandolin work I got to do with her. But, you know, like everything else, sometimes, you know, the creative juices want to flow in different ways. And so that's why I went out on my own. And now I'm kind of doing the things I want. And so, and what's really cool about that, Steve, is that people have accepted it. You know, Bluegrass Radio, event producers, and especially the folks who purchase the CDs and come to the shows. I mean, people seem to have accepted that, and I'm just really thrilled.
Well, and when you show up with your voice and your guitar, you've got to fill all the spaces, and you got to do it tastefully. You just can't fill it up with notes because there's an empty space. You got to use that space, and then you got to fill in the bass runs. Talk a little bit about it. We're talking to Jim Hurst, if you just tuned in. Your style of playing encompasses not just the lead and the melody, but you do it's kind of a Merle Travis, but how would you describe the use, what you do with a guitar to cover all those bases?
You know, that's a good question, Steve. I think, when I have a couple of different profiles on the web. You know, I have my Facebook pages, I have my website pages, and then I have this thing called Reverb Nation. And what it's basically, I pay for these services. Well, Facebook is not paid for, but everything else I pay for, and it's a way for me to get my thing to the people, what I'm doing. And so you have to kind of describe what it is so they can put you in the right places, I guess is what you call it. So you have to come up with this description thing, and it used to be two or three words. I don't know if anybody can do that anywhere, so many different kinds of music. But I think, I think I'm somewhere, and I hesitate to do this because I don't want people to think that I think I'm as good as these people.
No.
And that my type of music is influenced by and kind of sounds like Doc Watson, James Taylor, and Jerry Reed, with maybe a little Marty Robbins or something thrown in, only because that's probably the closest similarity. So if people wanted to hear what I'm doing and they wanted to go by the description, because I do kind of do the singer-songwriter thing a little bit, and I do the Doc Watson thing a little bit. I play flat pick, and I also play fingerstyle. I also do the Jerry Reed thing where I play a funny song and do some finger-picking kind of guitar, and some of it's kind of pretty complex guitar stuff, and matter of fact, I use a James Taylor, a Doc Watson, or Jerry Reed song in my sets, and I do that as a tip of the hat to them. And so I think all those folks, well, I know all those folks have influenced me, and what I'm trying to do is carve out my own little niche in there to where I'm able to accomplish what I want to on the song. So it's part of me, but like, for instance, on Through the Garden, it's just that Mother Maybell star, Doc Watson style guitar is what my dad used to play with a flat pick. And it's that Carter style guitar where you're playing rhythm as well as the melody. And it's really simple. I try to play it as clean as I can and melodically in the tone. I try to get the melody and the tone to really sound good to envelop the lyric of the song and the idea of the song. And so that's important to me. It's the structure of what I do on guitar is important to me to illuminate the lyric. It's not about watch me do this, folks, and watch me do this other thing, folks. Yeah, there's some of that in what I do, but it's more about the song, you know.
Okay, now take Mother Maybelle style and then put that right up against when I've seen you do live. And you got to record Mustang Sally at some point.
I love that song.
Oh, man.
And people who come and see me, if I break into that, you know, people, they don't know what it is because my intro to that is kind of...
Sneaks up on them.
Yeah, it's kind of between Motown and funk, kind mm-hmm. of on guitar. And then when I start singing it, they all instantly, I think all of them, but there may be one or two people that didn't expect it, didn't really want that. But, you know, everybody's to their own. But they all start smiling, and they all start tapping their feet and moving. And some, and I get them to sing it with me. It's just a crowd. I just love it. And it's fun for me to mess with, too.
Yeah.
Side of me out.
You know, the last time I talked to you, which probably actual real talk, and not just trading messages and whatnot, you were headed... you were driving in to do some stuff with Rob Ikes. Are you gonna? You think you're gonna get in the studio with Rob?
Well, we had talked about that actually not too long ago. He and I are really enjoying doing some duet work, but he is so busy doing Blue Highway. Their album, their last album, has really been good for them, and they've gotten a lot of work. So Rob, it's hard for Rob, as everybody probably would imagine, to dedicate any time to he and I doing anything because his schedule with Blue Highway is first and foremost. That's his primary gig. And that's what they call the, you know, his first obligation. And so, if he's got a weekend that, so let's say, some of the band members are deciding to take this weekend and go to Aruba or whatever, some of them's gonna go visit some family for a major wedding anniversary, and so they book that weekend off. Sometimes Rob will say, hey man, what are you doing that weekend? Let's book something. And so, and we've been able to do that. Last year we only got to do the last couple days of November and like the first 3 weeks of December. We didn't get to do anything else that year except for Rezo Summit, which happens, I think this year, this past year it happened in November, which is a 3 or 4 day get-together of Rezophonic guitar player, dobro players in Nashville. And so I go down and help him out sometimes. And so we, you know, booking this thing, promoters want a new, some sort of recording, they want photos and they want all this. So we're doing this kind of on a side thing. We're not making a primary deal out of it. Mm-hmm. And so we just went and had some photos done with Senor McGuire in Nashville, and we started talking about maybe getting in a studio sometime this year to record something mm-hmm. to use, and also to have he and I just like to document what we've done, whether mm-hmm. he wants it or not. It's just we both like to record as much as we can. So that's in the future, hopefully not too distant future.
Well, but get some stuff cut, and I guarantee you we'll play it on Worldwide Bluegrass for you. I guarantee it. I've seen some. There's some YouTube stuff of you and Rob out there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, there's a new video from Portland. Mm-hmm. We did the Alberta Rose Theater in Portland, Oregon. And this guy had a very professional setup and a really nice high-def camera. And we're going through that to see what we can maybe use on our press kits and maybe on our websites,
okay.
panels or whatever. And so that'll hopefully be available soon. But, you know, I've been fortunate, Steve, to play with a lot of great folks. Some of it being more of a permanent situation, some of it being one-off here and there, but... You know, Tim O'Brien and Mark Schatz and John Cowan and, of course, Claire. But I've been able to be in two duets that just, you couldn't ask for better people or better musician to be with. And that's Missy, of course,
mm-hmm.
with the Jim Hurst and Missy Raines duo from, I think we started that, our first date was in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And we officially went out in 2000, and we ended that in 2006. And we did that as a duet for a good time. And that was wonderful opportunity for both of us to kind of do what we did. And precursor to what we're doing now. And then, of course, I'm doing this duet with Rob. And both of these folks, Steve, I mean, the bluegrass is so... I think we're all spoiled because everybody in bluegrass is so good people. I mean, there's rare occasion when you run into a bluegrass artist or a promoter or somebody that's of a bad... maybe has a bad personal skills, you know, social skills. Big inflated ego. It does happen. I mean, it is an ego business. But most people are so thankful to get... they're doing it for the right reasons, that, man, getting to play with Rob now and, of course, Missy back then is such a beautiful bunch of memories and opportunity for me. I really have a lot of fun with that.
You know, I want to talk about the new album, Intrepid, in just a little bit. Don't let me forget that. But going back to the thing where you and Missy, you would be at festivals. And am I wrong, or did you both sort of explore music and different styles? You would start out kind of doing a bluegrass duo, and then you would expand and expand, and you were... I mean, you were doing jazz and blues and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it seems to me both of you, and like you say, look at what you're doing now. Both of you maybe took that opportunity to explore new styles. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. I mean, bluegrass don't have too many duets of bass and guitar where both instruments take solos. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Missy and I were one of the few to ever do that, if not really the only one, maybe. I don't know. I don't like to say that very much because it sounds like, look at what I've done. I don't like that. But, yeah, I think what Missy and I wanted to do is express music of different types, and our recording shows that. It shows some pretty kind of traditional bluegrassy types, obviously, and even a couple of songs that are more sounding. But because we didn't have a banjo or a fiddle or dobro or mandolin in the band, bluegrass DJs and fans didn't necessarily call it bluegrass. But they knew by hearing us do it that it was part of our heritage, part of our influence. And so that's all we tried to do. And then, of course, we did things like Louis Jordan. We did things, Brazilian kind of flavored music. We did lyrics that were very melancholy or thought-provoking or, you know, cause you to go back in memories or even imagine. And then we did lyrics that were more, you know, I don't know, straight up, and then some that were kind of funny. And that was part of, I think, who we are. I mean, we just tried to reveal who we are as people and musicians, not just what we could do on the instruments. And so I think the average fan that are not musicians can associate with those kind of things more than the hieroglyphics of, you know, upper-level musicianship. And I think one thing that I remember, Dave Harvey actually told me that Larry Sparks told him one time, I think they were playing Bean Blossom, but it might not have been. He said that, you know, Dave was up there playing, and Dave was a great mandolin player.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, and of course he had his own band Wild.
And a great builder of instruments.
Oh yeah, and a repairman too.
Yeah.
And so he was up there and he was just playing, you know, there was a bunch of guys backstage somewhere and he was kind of playing a little more than maybe what he was used to doing with Larry, and he was just kind of stretching out a little bit. And he said after the set, Larry come to him and he said, Dave, man, you're a great player, and something like, this is not quoting, but he said, you know, I love your playing, you're in my band, but you're not playing to the musicians backstage. You're playing to mom and pop.
Well, there's a lot of wisdom to that.
And that's a wonderful statement, you know. And I think it helps me to remember that, too. So I'm thankful that, first of all, Larry, you know, told Dave that, and then Dave shared it to me. I think that's a great statement. And I think that's what Missy and I tried to do. I think our kind of musical exploration kind of left some people thinking that we were going to be more bluegrass, and they were a little disappointed. At least that's my take on it. But I think we gained a lot of fans that weren't necessarily dyed-in-the-wool bluegrass fans. So it kind of, there was a place for us, I think. But by the time we figured out it really wasn't going to go where we thought it was, we had already started working back with Claire, and her and I both wanted to kind of explore some other things. So that's the only reason we brought it down. We're still great friends, and big admirer of Missy Raines. But yeah, thanks for asking. That was a lot of fun.
And but now you still have all those branches out there that you can go back and re-explore. And of course, she's got the new hip now, which Missy's going to be, just for people listening, she's going to be on the show in April when her new CD. She was always waiting for the new CD because I played the last new hip on this station, and it's ready to drop now. So it's going to come out in April. And Missy's going to come on, and we're going to talk about some of these same issues with her. And I thought, well, I'll just ask you about it, too. The new album, how do you choose songs? This is always an interesting topic for me, for what actually gets produced.
Well, that's a good question. And I think, depending on what it is I'm doing, it takes on a different thing. When I did Open Window, my first CD, it came out in 98, I wanted to give a cross-section of the things that I like to do and the things I think I do pretty good, maybe, so that people could get to know me as an artist or as a musician. In that case, I was just working with the Claire Lynch and Front Porch String Band at the time. I had been in the country music field. And Claire actually suggested, why don't you record another album? You can sell it on my seat, on my table. And I thought, record a CD, you know, record one. And so I thought that was really nice of her and Larry. So I went in with the help of Rich Adler and a bunch of friends and went in there and recorded it. And it did me a lot of good. It gave me some visibility to the radio people, to the critics, to the fans, you know, to other musicians. And then, so that material was chosen to kind of give a cross-section of who I was, and that's why I titled it Open Window. My next CD was with Missy Raines. We actually did a duet CD called Two, T-W-O, in 2000. And then my next solo project, which at that point was solo, meant it was my project, not something with Claire or another band. It was a lot of other people on there. It was Second Son, and that's a contemporary bluegrass project with Pine Kessel Records. Mm-hmm. And that was chosen as kind of a dedication to my heritage, to my dad. He was the reason I started playing, was because he played. And so there's a couple things on there that reminded me of Dad, including the last song on there is a throwback to him, listening to him once sing Danny Boy in the kitchen by himself. And it, I'll remember that the rest of my life. It was such a memorable moment. And several songs on there had that kind of feel. And then also some of the things that I wanted to do, playing with some of my favorite people, Allison Brown and, you know, Rob Ikes and Casey Dreesen and Stuart Duncan and Al McBride. I mean, just really had an opportunity to play with a lot of folks. Dead Missy and I put out Synergy in 03, and we wanted to take what we had done on 2. The material we selected there was hopefully a cross-section of what we could do vocally, as well as the kind of music we like, and instrumentally. And then when we did Synergy, it was just a second step of that. And Synergy came out in 03, and the material there was in some ways a little more aggressive, and in other ways about the same as 2. And the fact that the material we chosen was chosen with a lot of heart and a lot of sincerity on both of those, well, all the albums I recorded. And then my next project was A Box of Chocolates, which was, I was still in a band with Claire Lynch as a part of her Claire Lynch band this time. And it was another way, sometimes they call it vanity albums. You just go and record the things you want to record. And I happened to like to write material, and I wrote a song on mandolin called Mando Bounce. I wrote one on bass called, Chocolate Chase Lounge. I wrote one on banjo called Unlucky Seven, and had an opportunity to record some more with some of my favorite people like Buck White, you know, and Scott Vestal and Michael Cleveland and Wayne Benson again. And then when I did Intrepid, that's the first album to me. Intrepid is the first album that is so vital because it sets up what I'm doing now primarily is my solo thing. And I think it was really critical for me to give a cross-section of what people might see in my audience. Plus, they get to hear the kind of music that I really like to do as well as the other CDs I got to do, too. Right. Having those other CDs recorded gives me that, if you will, catalog, so people, if they hear those other recordings, they get an idea of who I am. And Intrepid was more about what I do live. So everything on the album is me by myself, solo guitar, solo voice, with the exception of the last song, which is a quartet gospel song. Yeah. And so I did that because I think the song is really great, and I got the chance to sing with Amanda Smith of Kenny and Amanda, got to sing with Scott Vestal's wife, Alice, and also Shelton Fiesel, who used to work with Doyle Lawson, and actually was singing harmony with Loretta Lynn until like 2 years ago this past December. No, a year ago this past December, she was still touring, and he was working with her. But he's a wonderful talent, and he's bass singing is one of the best things he does, and it was just a really cool opportunity to get that song done with a quartet like that. And it was really about folks, if they got the CD, they would hear what I do live, and I can do everything on that CD live because that's what I did. I recorded it that way. So although in multi-track world, in order to get the separation between the guitar and the vocal, you do it at different takes, but I play that stuff live.
Oh yeah.
Except for the quartet gospel song, obviously, because I'm by myself.
If you did that live, then there would be some different awards created for you if you could do a four-part vocal live.
Yeah, I think they might ship me off to, you know, Ellis Island or something and say, you know what, you know, you don't belong here yet. You know, you're weird.
Oh, man, this has been, and folks, just so you know, Jim Hurst is grandpa number two in waiting, and everything's cool with that. I told him at the beginning of the show that I wasn't, you know, if you didn't show up, it'd be because you were having a grist. Take a second, talk about Grandpa Jim for just a second. Would you mind?
Grandpa Jim is the kind of grandpa that I think, I mean, I'm trying to be a grandfather that I never knew. Both my grandfathers died. My maternal grandfather, Garrett Lambden, died before my mom and dad was even, well, they might have been married, but he died early on. And then my paternal grandfather, Arthur Hurst, he died when he was, in 1961, I think it was, from black lung from being in the mines. And I didn't really get to know them. I was too young I wasn't even here when Garrett Lambden died. And I was only six or so when Arthur Hurst died. So I never really got to know them, and I've read, you know, books like Grapes of Wrath and different things where I know other people's grandparents, and I have in my mind what I think a good grandparent is, a grandfather. And that's what I want to be. I want to be a good grandfather, a loving, nurturing grandfather that can spoil whoever it is, whichever child it is, to death, and then hand them back to mom and dad and watch them, you know, work trying to get the spoiling out of them or whatever. Little Lila Grace was born almost 14 months ago. She's like four or five days away from being 14 months old.
Mm.
It's such a delight. She's such a wonderful young girl. And then Ezekiel James should be here, hopefully. I think I was telling you before we started, I think Monday is what they're, if he's not here by then, they may induce labor and get her here, because that's when her doctor is going to be in office.
Yeah.
And plus, he's full term. He at first, it was the 28th of February as a due date, then they adjusted that to the 24th, so Monday will be about right. And so yeah. I'm looking forward, and he actually, this is pretty important. I haven't really said this because I don't want to make my son and daughter-in-law feel any different than they already do, you know, about it. But because my son is having a son, the Hurst family name from my dad is actually being carried on.
Oh, okay. There you go. Well,
everybody,
good.
All the other men in my dad's family, his brothers and himself, my older brother has a son. And so he's the last name is Hurst, but he so far is not married. And if he does, he'll have two. But right now, Brandon's the only one out of all the men of my grandfather's, my paternal grandfather's family, to have a boy carry it on. And
cool.
So the other have been women in my family. And so, girls being born. So I'm really excited about that, too.
Cool. And everything's good. We're just waiting. But everything's fine. And the name is already Ezekiel James, right?
Yep. Cool. And my son and daughter-in-law are both, you know, they're Christians, and they really want to, you know, they went through the Bible and, you know, they looked at names, you know, in a lot of serious ways. A lot of people do. Some people, I think nowadays, it seems like there's a trend to name kids after cars or,
yeah,
or restaurants or hotels. I don't know. And whatever they decide is their business. I really like the fact that my son and daughter-in-law are using biblical kind of influence.
Two of them, yeah.
And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And nobody has to do that, but I like the fact that they're doing it. It makes me feel good. I mean, of course, his first name is Ezekiel. The first thing I said was, you know, his name is Brandon. I said, Brandon, would you like to have the name Ezekiel? Would you like to write that every day? He goes, well, Dad, I think I would, but he says, we're going to call him Zeke.
Zeke, yeah, buddy. There's a good one. There's a good one.
That's pretty cool.
I like Zeke.
I do too. And I'm just going to call him Buddy and, you know, Number One or whatever. He's going to be my buddy, I hope.
Well, listen, man. Gosh, I've had such a good time. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. I know people in the chat room, which I can't get to. I got my hands are full, but there's people like, man, this is great. What a great guy. Well, I agree with you. But I hope you've enjoyed coming on today, Jim. I hope you'll come back.
Hey, man, I enjoy coming on here. Sometimes I get in the chat room. Sometimes I get in there and I just listen and I don't sign on to the chat. I mean, I sign on, but I don't really say anything.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, sometimes I just want to listen and see what everybody else is saying.
Yeah,
I don't
want
to kind of derive the conversation, but sometimes I sign on. It's really cool to talk to folks, and I really appreciate what you guys are doing. Real quickly, I will tell you, though, the romp in June, at the end of June,
yeah,
in Owensboro, I'm actually going to play there with the David Grisman Sextet. I'm also doing some work with David Grisman as part of his folk jazz trio, which is he, myself, and his son Sam on bass. And then I also have done a little bit of work and going to do some more work this year with the David Grisman Bluegrass Experience as the guitar player, taking over for Jim Nunley when he's not available. So I'm getting to play in three different bands of David Grisman, including in June at the Romp, and I invite everybody out to the Romp.
Oh, yeah.
I also invite everybody to my website, jimhurst.com. You can sign up on my mailing list. You can just look at my calendar. The mailing list is free. I send some out about once a month. And I invite them to sign on, and they can always unsubscribe whenever they want to. And, of course, I'm on Facebook, a couple pages, Jim Hurst, and then also the Jim Hurst fan page. So keep up supporting WWB, and thanks to all you guys, you know, you and Terry and all the folks, including Jeff down in Australia. You guys
Oh, yeah.
Have a wonderful job of spreading the music, keeping it real, but also keeping it varied, and allowing yahoos like me to be part of the playlist here and there. It's really, really cool, and I appreciate everybody to get to do what I love to do. And thanks for everything, and thanks for an opportunity to talk to you. Tell Sonny, I got to tell you this before I
go. Okay, you go, because he's going to be here, and he's going to know.
Okay, good.
Go ahead.
First of all, he's the guy that made me want to play banjo. I mean, Earl was out there, and so was Don Reno, and so was Alan Shelton, and a bunch of others that I really feel like is vital to the bluegrass, to the banjo. And I always appreciated that. But when I heard Sonny's his take on the banjo, it just seemed to me to light something in me that made me want to pick one up. So I actually started playing banjo after I started hearing things like Up This Hill and Down, It's the Kind of Woman I Wanted, and all the pretty things like Making Plans and all the really cool things that Sonny brings that he brought to the Osmond Brothers. But back when they were young and he was a young, very vital person in bluegrass, even though he talked about how hard it was to do that. But that band was something else with Del Sled and all them. My dad, we would go and see him whenever we could. And my dad got to know him a little bit. I don't think Sonny remembers him, but Dad was always that big old boy on the banjo kind of thing, because Sonny was like a football player or something.
He was a big feller.
So Dad said one time, he told Sonny, on board the Osmond Brothers bus, he sat there and he said, man, you're big enough to eat hay, go bear hunting with a switch, and crap right in the middle of the road. And I asked Sonny one time if he remembered that. He said, yeah, I think I do remember that. But he didn't remember it was, but that was my dad.
Okay.
Now, you can insert other words other than crap.
I can do that.
Yeah. And so it was really, we were all just enamored with the Osmond Brothers. Of course, we loved all the bluegrass, bands, Jimmy Martin and Stanley Brothers and all them. But, it's really wonderful that the Osmond Brothers got a chance to do what they did, because it brought a whole other generation, a whole other clientele to bluegrass, just like Seldom Seen and Country Gentlemen and all them other people did. So
they really did. And, and the stuff that they did, and someone here is in the chat room, oh, he's a banjo player. Yeah, Jim, I've seen Jim Hurst play banjo. He's a fine banjo player. But the Osmond Brothers, what they did, they changed so much in of course, their song selection, and Sonny was just, he could do the diehard Scruggs stuff, but he just added pedal steel sounds and different little things that he heard, and he really changed the landscape for banjo players as much as anyone, I think. I mean, that's just my opinion, but who am I?
I think so, too. He and Alan Shelton and Bill Emerson are three of maybe the lesser sung heroes. They are sung heroes, but I think the three of those guys really brought a whole other level of and of course, Bill Keith and many.
Oh,
many,
sure, yeah. I mean, you can't limit the list, but
yeah. And I'll tell you something else too that ties into Intrepid, the Open G medley you played earlier. The last part of Groundspeed, which is an Earl Scruggs song, I kind of borrowed from Scott Bestel's version on his album In Pursuit of Happiness. I think the name of In Pursuit of Happiness. Of course, Scott's one of my favorites of all time. And he recorded Intrepid, but he does this, I call it, guitar pickers call it double thumbing, where you're actually, the thumb is dropping down to be part of whatever melody and back up to support, and then back in and back out. So it's, it's part of the finger picking style, right, as opposed to supporting with the Kentucky drop thumb.
Right.
It's actually part of the integral part of it. I call it double thumbing. There may be a technical phrase for it in the bluegrass banjo world, I don't know. But he did that on his album, and I asked him where he came up with that, and he said, man, he says, I think I heard Sonny Osmond do it first. So I went back and listened to some of the things I have, and sure enough, that same kind of phrase, and I remember now that I listened back to those albums, I mean, of course, a lot of the stuff I have on Osmond Brothers is LPs, and I can't hear that, but when I go back and listen to the song, sure enough, Sonny's doing that. And that's another thing. Now, Earl may have done it or somebody else, but I don't think so. I think Sonny was one of the first ones to do that. So a tip of the hat to Mr. Sonny Osmond.
All right.
Well, the sound and his influence on banjo is not to be denied, and I think we all owe him a debt of gratitude. I mean, he's always been really kind to me, and I appreciate him. And thank you too, Steve. I like to hear myself talk, I guess, but to say hello to everybody in chat room for me and everybody on WWB. And I'll hope to get in there soon and chat with you guys.
Well, you've agreed. I may have been off the air, but you've agreed. We're going to get Sonny back on, and after you have a new grandbaby, we're going to hook you and Sonny up for a bit, and we're just going to have some fun chatting down the road.
That sounds great, Steve.
All right,
thanks, Matt, for the opportunity, okay, and so, all you do.
Thanks, Jim Hirsch. We're gonna say goodbye to Jim. See you later, Jim.